time for Caffeinated Comics, a lively There's discussion and debate on comics, film, television, and collectibles, all fueled by the magic of Frappuccinos. Caffeinated Comics is sponsored by Chimeras Comics. Chimeras is your one-stop for comic books, graphic novels, hero clicks, Magic the Gathering, and more. Explore the fantastic at Chimeras Comics. And now, here's your hosts, John and Steven.
Thank you. This is Caffeinated Comics, and I am your host, John Clark. What you're hearing right now is some Tom Lehrer. We don't have Tom Lehrer in the studio. I wish we did. And we're not even discussing Tom Lehrer, but this is something that came up during discussion, and both Bill Monroe and I got really excited when we both hit on this name. So I wanted to kick off the show with it. I'm kind of having fun, like, screwing around with the theme song. I wrote our theme song, so I am not the one who's going to be upset when we don't play it every week. And then after the last couple weeks of playing some Walker's music when we interviewed him, I thought I'd just switch it up a little bit. But as I said, we talked to Bill again this week. Bill just came off the Jonathan Colton Cruise, the fourth annual Jonathan Colton Cruise. It sounded like a delightfully geeky week on a cruise ship. He invited me at the last minute. There was an opening, but it was the exact same weekend we were in Puerto Rico, so I had to decline. But I do want to go, and I think it would be great for this podcast to actually be on the scene. But the next best thing is having Bill come back and give us his report. It sounds as geeky as you can get. We've said it before on the show, but Bill's taste runs slightly geekier than I do. You know, I'm firmly set in the Marvel, DC, Doctor Who, Star Trek kind of universe, and Bill goes into that Will Wheaton, John Hodgman, Jonathan Colton world, and they were all there. They were all there on the ship. Paul F. Tompkins was there on the ship. He got to meet all of them, and he had a great time. So we talk about it for an hour, and honestly, anything else I say at this point, Bill's going to say in the interview, so let's just get to it.
Welcome to my secret lair on Skullcrusher Mountain. I hope that you've enjoyed your stay so far. I see you've met my assistant Scarface. His appearance is quite disturbing.
I did just get back. And my sunburn is just about faded now.
Hey, mine too.
You know, it was interesting. I was in the stateroom with my girlfriend, and we were talking about sunburn, and she got sunburned too, and it was like she was like, day three sunburn fail, and I'm like, no sunburn until day three win.
But where were you that you got sunburned? In case I don't set this up,
I was on Joko Cruise Crazy 4.
How many of them have you done?
This was my second.
Okay.
This was the second one that I've done. And yeah, I'm pre-reserved for next year's. So, but this was a six-night Caribbean cruise with stops in Grand Cayman, Jamaica, and Royal Caribbean's private resort of Labadee in Haiti. And the whole thing was organized by Jonathan Colton, a well-known internet musician who was sort of a code monkey by day and decided he wanted to make music and make a business and make a life online. And he did it starting with a song a week project where every week for a year he released a new song, and they're all sort of geeky or nerd oriented. And so that's really great. And he partners with Paul and Storm, another geeky musical duo who just had an incredibly successful Kickstarter for their new album, Ball Pit, and with a whole bunch of other entertainers. And it was 6 days of just packed activity on the Independence of the Seas in the Caribbean. The boat holds about 4,000 passengers.
Wow.
Plus staff. And as just our group, there were about 850 sea monkeys, which is what we refer to our group as. 850.
I thought there were actual sea monkeys. Just Brian. 4,000 people and 800 brine.
I'm sure there were. I mean, this is the kind of group that would actually set up a massive sea monkey aquarium. I'm not certain we've quite done that yet, but I think customs frowns on that. But I would not be surprised to see that happen. This is a group where it's sort of generating memes throughout the trip just by being all together. This is a group that actually a couple of folks got together. And they said, well, we're not going to have internet access because nobody wants to pay 20 cents a minute or whatever it is for like 300 baud speed. So what they did was they hacked together what we call Twitter, which is basically a version of Twitter that runs on somebody's laptop over the ship's Wi-Fi network without connecting to the internet.
So it was like an intranet.
It was an intranet. Yeah, exactly. We had our own intranet set up running our own Twitter-like messaging platform. And that's just the kind of thing that that happens. I mean, every day of the cruise, there are probably at least 3 to 6 hours of scheduled JOCO group activities, whether that's going to be the main concerts or the official karaoke times or the dance parties, where let me tell you, David Reese and John Hodgman really cut loose when it comes to a dance party. I am not kidding.
Just John Hodgman dance party.
It's amazing. John Hodgman is amazing on that. And then on top of all that, this is a group that just organizes a whole bunch of shadow cruise activities where it's groups of people getting up and it's that whole – it really is what you see in a lot of those sort of Disney movies or after school specials where you get a few people together and everybody's like, hey, let's put on a show. And then they put on a show.
So there's open mics happening on the boat?
Well, there's an official open mic. And then there are other people who go ahead and actually schedule separate concerts. If we can get a room, took over the goth club in the middle of the day for Glenn Raphael. He was one of the guys on the cruise. He set up his own concert, and that was then followed by what was referred to as the Molly Clicks show, which was former official performers on past cruises, but now just coming on because they like being here, of Molly Lewis and the Double Clicks. Put on their own show, which – the commitment that's involved with that. If you're familiar with Double Clicks, and I've raved about them.
Yeah, you talked about them on the show
to an almost
before.
Creepy degree in the past. But is that that means that Aubrey had to actually bring her cello from Portland?
Well, if you're a cellist,
and then get on a boat.
If you're a cellist, you got to bring the cello everywhere you go. You got to practice.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't get so good. Like when I go on a long trip, I always bring a guitar because you never get so good where you don't have to practice. So when you choose the cello, you're kind of just chaining yourself to a cello for life.
A commitment, yeah.
Yeah, it's like marrying a very lazy fat man. You just got to drag this thing around and explain it to people. This is how Marge Simpson feels.
Yeah, they actually, we talked about the Double Clicks. They actually just did their own Kickstarter for a new album, and they kept adding other stretch goals to it. They just raised, I want to say it was just over $70,000 on Kickstarter.
Wow.
For doing their launch party. I think it was the largest ever music-oriented Kickstarter in Oregon.
Wow.
So I mean, that's the kind of folks that are there. I mean, and then other folks do. The other official acts included, Ben Acker and Ben Blacker from Thrilling Adventure Hour.
Yeah, Nerdist Writers Panel.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you hear? They just got the gig writing Thunderbolts for Marvel.
Oh, I hadn't heard that.
Yeah, this is going to be their first comic.
Oh wow!
And they're writing it together.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's really good. I mean, I always I have no problem plugging Nerdist podcast, but I just listened to the latest one where they talk to Adam Beach and Heath Corson and Len Wein and get tips about like how to take over a comic for other creators. That was really interesting. But the announcement just came out. The announcement probably came out like right after the cruise.
Yeah, probably. We got back to port on March 1st or so.
Yeah, it was right around that time. So now when these cruise,
right before it happened, you said a room opened up, and I really thought about taking it, but it was the same weekend we were in Puerto Rico.
Right, right.
But I am still tempted to do it. Is it? It sounds to me like it's a floating convention.
You know, that's one way to think about it, sort of like a floating convention, but it is really – I prefer to think of it more as Nerd Summer Camp.
All right.
Because unlike a convention, a convention always has a very mercenary aspect to it. I mean, there's the merch to buy. And
right, the dealer room.
Yeah, there's the dealer room, and there really isn't that in this case. At a convention, you've also got, you know, your performers – are really a separate entity from your attendees. And you've got your formal audience presenter kind of thing going on. And yeah, there's some of that. But then you've got things happening where performers will just hold office hours. And, the running joke is the whole thing is treated as sort of like a school group and type of thing. So we have morning announcements, and then there's office hours. John Hodgman holds office hours in, the big 24-person hot tubs up on deck. And people just go out and they hang out in the hot tub with John Hodgman and chat.
Did you do that?
No, I did not do the John Hodgman office hours. I did do the Will Wheaton and the Grant Imahara office hours.
Yeah, I thought Will Wheaton was there. I thought you mentioned that.
Yeah, Will wasn't was an official member of it. He didn't have a stage slot, but he was the emperor of the game room. So One of the other aspects of this is that a lot of the folks are just really into board games and role-playing games and, all the different card games. And so we take over the entire conference center. And there's just tables filled up with that and, dozens and dozens of board games available. And there are people just playing games 24 hours a day.
Were you playing games?
I didn't. Maybe next year I'll try to play some more of the board games. I haven't done a lot of board gaming in recent years. But, it's just filled with people doing that. On the walls, we've got paper Yelp set up to rate the different dishes and things coming out of the different dining rooms and adventures there. And towards the end, about halfway through, actually, when we talk about meme generation, one of the things that Royal Caribbean does is they have at the dinner, at the main dining room, they have, at the scheduled dinner every night, they would have, put your hands together for your assistant waiters with warm bread. And they announced the arrival of the dinner rolls with this whole warm bread thing. By the middle of the week, the Sea Monkeys had gone ahead and celebrated warm bread in every way possible, including developing a whole bunch of posters praising the warm bread that we then brought to the main dining room to join in the parade of the warm bread.
So it really is what you're saying. There's no division between the attendees and the performers in that you're, as attendees, you're creating your own things to do involving warm bread.
Exactly. And the performers, some of them will be a little bit more apart from the group. Others are just fully embracing the group and down there playing games and just hanging out. And what really happens is we end up with this really amazing Sea Monkey community that pops up. As you get closer and closer to it, this Facebook group set up for this, and there's forums on the Jonathan Colton website, and you end up with a focus of people talking, because this is the type of group that, again, is going to be a little bit more heavily weighted to the introverts and the socially awkward, but it's the type of thing where I know, approaching a new group, some people I don't know, do you really want to say hi? Do you really want to bother them? Am I just going to annoy people in my presence? That doesn't happen in this group. Everybody is just so warm and welcoming, and they understand, too, some people are just going to be shy and just a little bit of encouragement and go up to say hi to anyone, and people are real receptive. But they're also real receptive to understanding that, for a lot of folks just with an introverted nature who are okay with that, who are okay just being part of an event and not actually talking to other people. So there's a lot of respect for that you don't see a lot. So it gives people a real chance to, experience it how they want. It's really an amazing group of people and an amazing community to be a part of for something that's just, 6 to 8 days long. And it's really welcoming in that respect, and with the performers interacting, and like I say, a number of performers coming back year after year, not even as official performers, You know, folks like, you know, even power couple Kim Eby and Greg Benson are there. Or you've got, like I say, the Double Clicks, Molly Lewis come back, author Joseph Scrimshaw coming back as an attendee. And you've got all these people who've performed in the past just coming back as attendees to just experience it. And it's really great. And we've got a number of folks who've been there, you know, every year. You know, Paul F. Tompkins, you know, was back this year.
I love Paul F. Tompkins.
Oh, he was brilliant. And, you know, we got to see him with his mustache only a day or two grown. Because of a disappointing razor accident that he had.
I saw him, the first time I saw him was pre-mustache.
Uh-huh.
I talked about this on the show before. I ran into him when I was handing out flyers in Times Square for the improv.
Uh-huh.
And then I saw him again when I first moved to Chicago when he was doing the Bring Paul F. Tompkins to Your Town, the 300 groups on Facebook.
Right.
So he did that at the Beat Kitchen on the north side, and both times he was fantastic. And he's one of those guys, just every single time – he's on every podcast basically.
Yeah, yeah.
But he's always just nails it out of the park. So how was he cruise-wise?
Oh, he was amazing to see him get up there and just do a show. And his show, I mean, you could – I mean, it was polished. It looked like a set that he'd probably been doing for, you know, for months or years, but it was all fresh. I mean, it was all new material, and he just nails it. And then he goes ahead and he does a bit with John Hodgman, where they bring up and they have a TV reference battle and stuff. And you know,
does John Hodgman still have the mustache?
Yes, he does.
Okay, no one seems to like it, but he's keeping it. He's
And that's the thing. He revels in that. He revels in that.
Yeah, I just saw his Netflix special, and I don't know if he did the same material, but he spends a good 10 minutes about how everyone hates his mustache.
No, he talked more about things like his Ragnarok survival kits. He talked about movies. He plays the evil nemesis on the cruise, and you know, he just and then he co-hosts the big dance party with David Reese, who is probably best known for his artisanal pencil sharpening.
Of course, best known.
But David Reese has a new show coming up, and we got to see a preview of that. We got to see the first half of his pilot that's, you know, at the point that, you know, they showed it on the boat, and it's really still in early draft stages, but it is going to be on Nat Geo. It's at the point where they still are using Shutterstock holders.
So it has like watermarks on all the pictures?
Yeah, it's great. And it's all about how to make an ice cube. This is going to be a 30-minute show on National Geographic, and it's awesome.
Speaking of National Geographic, I think we're going to cover it heavily on the show. Have you seen Neil deGrasse Tyson's Cosmos yet?
No, I haven't, but I'm looking forward to that. I've got to get that recorded.
It's so you. Yeah, they're showing it on Fox on Sunday nights and then repeating it on Nat Geo on Monday nights.
Right. Yeah. I've heard some amazing things about it. And, you know, I caught Neil deGrasse Tyson on The Nerdist just, I guess, about a week ago.
Yeah. I just listened to that. Yeah. He's always great.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was awesome. So I'm really looking forward to hearing that.
And I found it fascinating because when I put it in my DVR, it accidentally got the original Carl Sagan series.
Oh wow!
So I'm rewatching the Carl Sagan series because they did a marathon over the weekend. So I have all 13 episodes of the Carl Sagan series, and I'm watching those in between these new episodes of Neil deGrasse Tyson, and they cover a lot of the same stuff. Mm-hmm. But it's great because the Carl Sagan stuff is so obviously PBS in the late 70s.
Right.
I mean, it looks like an episode of Doctor Who.
I was just thinking back today about the, you know, getting on the spaceship of the imagination.
And
the early graphics, the one that really stuck with me from that show was there's this one of Carl Sagan standing on a calendar as he illustrates just how much older the universe is than the presence of human beings. And you know, it was amazing.
Well, the funny thing is, I know you haven't seen the new one, but Neil deGrasse Tyson does that as well. Like,
awesome.
He does the Universal Calendar, and he does the Spaceship of the Imagination, but now it's all HD and CG, where it was like you could see – watching Carl Sagan do it, as great as it is, you can see one shoulder is green from like the reflection of the blue screen on him.
Right. Well, it was only like, well, blue screening was still brand new at that point. It was revolutionary technology when Star Wars did it.
Yeah, and his Spaceship of the Imagination looked very Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Mm-hmm. Very much so.
Yeah, but it was so great just hearing that voice, hearing the billions and billions.
Billions and billions of star stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, do you remember watching the original one as a kid?
Oh, yeah. We watched it. We definitely watched it.
My dad watched it, and I tried to watch it, and then it was like – it went right over my head right away because I was like eight.
You see, I was really into the astronomy and space all up into high school. So
yeah, I got
really into it.
Yeah, I had the subscription to Omni at the time.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, it's you're gonna love Cosmos. It's
okay,
it's
great.
It's everything you hoped an update to the Carl Sagan show would be. And
yeah.
If there's anybody that could fill Carl Sagan's shoes, it's Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Well, you know, I did actually put Neil deGrasse Tyson on the list of performers I would like to see on a future cruise too.
Oh, that's a good idea. If Neil deGrasse Tyson comes to the cruise, I probably will go. I bet you know what? Steven will go too. We could do a podcast there.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
It sounds like they'll let you do whatever you want. We could just do a podcast in a conference room.
Well, yeah, actually there's a separate conference room where they have done podcasts.
Ah! You know,
people can bring their own gear, or some people had existing gear, and yeah, there were a couple of podcasts that did in fact get recorded there on the cruise.
No, that's awesome. I love what you're saying about how cuz you're more plugged into this kind of more hard science tech, more introverted nerd scene than mm-hmm. Steven and I. We're definitely more in that C2E2, you know, fantasy, pop culture, TV, movie scene.
Right.
And that can be exhausting. When I go to these big conventions like a C2E2, there is a certain rock star mentality among some people where
right.
they kind of get off on the intimidation of it. And there are years – it all depends on who I run into. There are years where I just get worn out. So it just sounds like – it sounds like a whole boat of introverts would be so refreshing.
Just yeah, and extroverts that respect the introverts.
Right, because I feel like on that boat I would be considered an extrovert.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm not.
Well, I've come to the conclusion recently that I am a shy extrovert.
Yeah, I'm an easily intimidated extrovert or – I think probably closer to the truth. I am an introvert with extrovert skills.
Yeah, yes.
You know, which is how we met. I don't think we ever talked about this on the podcast, but we met doing speech and debate, which I was forced to do by all my friends because I would do bits and voices and impressions for just my friends.
Sure.
And they would go, "Well, you should do this. You should do this competitively," and that sounded terrifying. But because I did that, it's the reason I do things like this now, and it's also
right.
the reason that we've been friends for, as we were saying on the air, right before we were on the air, 25
yep.
years. Now, I think we're 27.
Oh, no. We've been friends since easily 27 years.
Yeah, I think in 1987.
1987, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, and I'll tell you what, on when you're talking about that on speech and debate, you know, my experience in speech and debate, you know, the 2 years in high school, 4 years in college, you know, that's probably been the single most important activity I've ever done in school and ongoing. I mean, you know, the friends I made through speech and debate like you and like a whole bunch of other folks, those are the folks, a lot of the folks that I'm still in touch with today, and it was, you know, what I did in speech and debate in college, you know, that's where I learned all the stuff that I use today. I mean, you know, to be a, you know, essentially a, you know, a trainer, a professional speaker, essentially, you know, is, you know, that fundamental training and skills of dealing with people in very high stress situations, of understanding how to separate, how to depersonalize, how the difference between personalized and depersonalized conflict, being able to just stand up in front of a group of people and not be intimidated by the idea of giving a speech, but actually energized by it. You know, the speech and debate was just incredibly, incredibly valuable. And it's why, you know, actually, I took another trip after the cruise. I just got back from Helena, Montana, celebrating, my college speech coach, Brent North, of 25 years of coaching at Carroll College. So we went back there and a bunch of other folks went back there to celebrate that with him. And, you know, it was fantastic just, you know, seeing the impact that has had. So, you know, I know this isn't a topic about forensics and speech and debate, but
it can be.
It can be.
You've been on the show enough to know that it goes wherever the hell it goes.
All these rabbit holes. But anybody who, you know, might be, thinking about getting involved in the activity, you know, I would definitely say, you know, do it. The value I've gotten from it has just been, you know, incredible. It's really shaped my life today.
Yeah, me too. I mean, I was just saying with Walker last week how he was the first guy to get me out of my house and get me from being surrounded
by – Well, that's the first step, really.
That was the first step. And then, I was able to talk to people. And so when I got to a new high school, I was able to talk to some of the people in that high school because only two guys came from my school with me. But speech and debate really solidified a lot of things. And, you know, if you can't do public speaking, you're going to hit a ceiling no matter what industry you're in. Because right. Eventually, if you get to a position of authority, you need to figure out how to talk to people. And I took it to an extreme and did, you know, stand-up for four sure. years and a lot of performing. But I find it fascinating. Most of the people that we did speech and debate with in the late 80s I follow a lot of them on Facebook, and I'm still talk to them. But they've all led such interesting lives. They're very motivated people, really right. smart. There's just so many lawyers and corporate mergers and performers. There's comedians. There's writers. There's like
very hardworking, high performing individuals in whatever field they've chosen to pursue. I mean, these are the folks where you know how if you want to get something done at work, you need somebody to do something for you, your best bet is to go to the busiest person you can find because they're the ones who will get it done.
Oh, that's
these are those people.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a bunch of doctors.
Oh, yeah.
And it's great. It's so funny because, you know, you go back to that time and all you could think about was just being 15 and trying to get the girls from the girls' school to date you. They're captains of industry now.
Oh, it's kind of – I mean, you know, in college, my first roommate, he and I became debate partners as well. He is now a federal prosecutor in Sacramento. and he is – he's excellent at his job, and he's working for the JAG Corps in the Army Reserves. And I'm like, wow, I remember you freshman year of college. I would not have guessed that.
Yeah.
But what happens is, you know, like I say, you know, it's just this group of people that just gets real focused. And, you know, when you've got that highly focused group of people, you know, you also find there's also going to be a lot of nerd crossover there too. So, I mean, that was one of the real interesting things where I could be in this group of 20 people in college and, you know, we're talking about Star Trek and, you know, that's not weird. And I didn't realize that was a little weird until I got out and started dealing with the muggles in the real world.
Well, I remember Python was a huge undercurrent. Everybody knew it.
Oh, sure.
You know, it was a lot of PBS watchers. And you know what?
Python and Princess Bride and
Right. Well, it's funny too because again, contrasting with last week, Walker was talking about how when he was 15, you know, he was hanging out on the streets of Howard Beach and trying to get beer and trying to get girls. And now I realize what I was doing at 15 was hanging out with you in my basement and a bunch of guys from my class, a bunch of guys that were on my speech debate team. And we were all doing improv.
That's right.
I was talking about this on the show before. There was no real improv presence in New York. I mean, Chicago always had Second City, and L.A. had the Groundlings. But until UCB Theaters opened, which Amy Poehler founded in the late 90s, there was no improv. So looking back, I know personally, I don't know about anybody else, I probably would have gone to the UCB and taken classes in when like senior year of high school, freshman year. Mm-hmm. But I never did. So instead, we just took cassette tapes. We just bought blank cassette tapes and pressed play and record, and we just all did improv. And I've got miles and miles of these tapes, and then later VHS copies of this stuff, all decades before I ever did comedy.
Right.
But it was because my friends were people in speech and debate. And I learned this later trying to motivate other friends to do it. They were the ones who could do it. They'd be like, you want to stand in front of a tape recorder for 20 minutes and pretend you're Ozzy Osbourne? Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that say no.
Yeah. We call those healthy.
Yeah. Well-rounded individuals. That's a great story. You know, our most famous movie, I don't think I've ever talked about this, and I know you know this really well, was Strongman.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and actually, I remember in the 90s, you tried to digitize it with technology that was not up to snuff yet.
I ended up with the dialogue lagging the video by like 20 seconds or something.
Yeah, we never quite got it, and it still only sits on one VHS tape. But it was this improv sketch that I did with Howie Weingarten, who was the funniest guy I've ever known, and he's my Facebook friend now. If I could get him on this show, I would that would – just imagine.
So everybody, if you're listening, go ahead and look up Howie Weingarten on Facebook
and
message him and add him and message him and tell him he needs to appear on Caffeinated Comics.
I want to know I want to see like 300 people he doesn't know just add him in one day. Maybe he cancels his account. I don't know what happens. But he was.
We're gonna crowdsource Howie.
Yeah, he was the funniest.
Our rallying cry: crowdsource, yes. Howie. Crowdsource Howie.
Kickstart Howie.
Kickstart Howie.
We'll buy him a USB microphone on Kickstarter. To talk on
Kickstarter
Skype
project.
But it's funny because just speaking of Howie, everybody has that guy they know who's the funniest guy they ever met, and comedians, it's always a guy that you've never heard of. You know, Mike Drucker, who is now a writer on The Tonight Show. We're all very proud of him. He's been on the show. He
amazing
always
amazing rise that, that guy has had.
He's had an
amazing talent, too. I mean, you know, if anybody has gone back and listened to the commentaries we did.
Yeah, our first podcast together.
The very first ones, you know, where we were watching Clambake without a director's commentary. So Drucker just decided he was going to be the director. And on the spot, and it went through. It was amazing.
And it was the entire film.
It was the entire film, and this was the third film we watched that night.
Yeah, we stayed up all night just doing podcasts. And they're still up there on iTunes. We talk about them a lot, but they're great. But Drucker, yeah, really brilliant, and just he's not yet 30, which is incredible. He's a writer on The Tonight Show, not yet 30.
Yeah,
but he always said the funniest person he ever met was his brother. And I met his brother. His brother's a sweet guy, but has never done comedy in his life. Funniest guy I ever met was Howie Weingarten. Mm-hmm. And but to make the long story short, the film we made was called Strong Man, A Man Who Is Strong. And we had one VHS camera, and it was about me, and I weighed about 128 pounds at the time, and I was going to lift the Atlantic Ocean over my head. We realized about 6 months later that we ripped off almost the entire thing from a Monty Python sketch. But it became a legend in the neighborhood, and you know, Howie and I were just two speech and debate guys that we were the only guys in our group that didn't go away to college. You know, you went to Montana. A lot of guys went upstate, and I went to Brooklyn College, and Howie went to Queens College.
Right.
So we were the only two guys left, so we hung out all the time. And we made this movie, and it's become such a legend. If there's some way I can get it on YouTube, I'll try to figure it out. But when I was in Puerto Rico – we're all telling these stories, and we talked about some of the stories that we told last night. It was like after a show, we're closing the bar, and we're all telling the old stories. And Jimmy Dowd gets up, he goes, "You got to see this movie Clark made called Strong Man." And it's 20 years later. But that, you know, to bring it full circle, that people that join speech and debate teams are motivated in a way that most people aren't.
Right.
Which is why we're spending a Tuesday night on a Skype call to each other talking about Jonathan Coulton.
Exactly.
So what else happened on the cruise? I mean, we sidetracked it.
So we're talking about that. We talked about the game room. You know, actually bumped into Grant Imahara one night in the game room as he was sitting down with his girlfriend to sort of start crafting some stuff because there's a big crafting area. We have a big festravaganza where everybody wears fezzes and mustaches. Which is actually the Paul F. Tompkins Memorial Mustache and Fez Stravaganza Formal Dance.
Was that something along those lines?
It's a memorial because on the first cruise, apparently, he was scheduled to attend, but then he canceled, so he was dead to us. So we held – so it became a memorial, and then he ended up coming on the cruise.
Is the Fez part of – Fez, I immediately thought Doctor Who. But
well, that's
the Fez
exactly
is
right. Why wouldn't you? Okay. It's because Fezes are cool.
Yeah.
Why everybody wears Fezes.
But also, Paul F. Tompkins had this long bit about how he worked in a hat store.
Mm-hmm. These Fezes trace their origin really to Doctor Who.
Okay. I thought it was all Paul F. Tompkins. He had a great part of it. He said half of his day were people walking in going, "Hey, let me see that king hat." Yeah, it's a crown, you know.
Yeah. But we also have a fancy pants parade.
Oh, that sounds like Paul F. Tompkins.
Yeah, well, this is actually a Jonathan Colton thing because he recorded a song called Fancy Pants as part of that Song a Week thing. Okay. He couldn't think of anything that week, so he just got a synthesizer and just started looping sounds and made a stupid song called Fancy Pants, which turned into a big thing. And now so there's a parade where everybody wears their fancy pants.
Did you bring fancy pants?
With lights. I did not participate. I did not have the time to craft, but yeah, you know, people.
Yeah, but you're a good shopper. I think you would just brought the fanciest pants that you ever bought.
Oh no! This goes beyond that. This is people with converting their pants into a ball pit, like an amusement park ball pit. That was the winner of the fancy pants. There are LEDs strung through the pants to light them up. There are sparkly pants. There are pants like cars. I mean, there are these are fancy pants.
So it's like a cosplay event.
There's some of that. Cosplayers are very welcome. There were one of the first main stage presenters we had early in the cruise was Nathan Soroya. Mm-hmm. Who, if you're not familiar with him, he currently has an exhibit in Times Square of Legos.
I'm gonna be in Times Square this weekend.
Yeah, definitely. Check out
his
Lego.
Is it outside or is it like in the Toys R Us in Times Square? Where is it?
I don't recall exactly where it is, if it's outside or not, but he is a Lego master. I mean, he ended up making a Lego Jonathan Colton and bringing that on the cruise. His creations have been featured in all sorts of places. So we spent a lot of time talking about that and the process and really turned into a discussion about how art just needs to be made and how important that is. We had Hank Green on, who got up there and played guitar about all sorts of nerdy music and all sorts of things, sort of like a modern day Tom Lehrer.
You haven't heard of Tom Lehrer, I'm speaking directly.
If you haven't heard
listeners.
Of Tom Lehrer, stop listening to this podcast right now and go listen to some Tom Lehrer stuff.
Lehrer. There's an H in Lehrer.
I mean, this stuff – I mean, Tom Lehrer, 50 – I guess 60s is where most of his stuff was recorded.
Late 50s, early 60s,
I mean, you know, this is one of those people that is, you know, practically a god to Weird Al making – I mean, this is the guy who wrote the songs about, you know, poisoning pigeons in the park, and it's funny. We'll go together when we go about the atomic bomb. I mean
– I know the entire elemental table because because he put it to Rodgers and Hammerstein.
Right, and actually the elemental – and that song about the element song actually ended up being featured in an episode of The Big Bang Theory.
Did it?
Fans of The Big Bang Theory will recall an episode where Sheldon got drunk at an awards banquet and got up there and sang the element song before taking off his pants.
Yeah, and I feel like those songs were a direct precursor to some of the stuff they did on Animaniacs, like The Nations of the World and The Capitals.
Yeah. He is really the father of smart – funny, science-oriented music.
Yeah. Did we have – I don't know if you and I have ever really talked much about Lehrer, but I discovered him on the Dr. Demento show in the 8th grade. Maybe that did you listen to Dr. Demento
Dr.
New York Radio?
All the time back on WAPP Hot 95 New York.
Yeah. I can't believe we never had this conversation because this was like maybe your freshman year in 8th grade, but I was obsessed with it. That was the first time I ever heard Monty Python. I was into Monty Python for about a year before I knew what any of them looked like. Because Dr. Mento would just play – he would play sketches. It was like –
Oh, sure.
He was kind of the end of the great comedy album era because the 70s were this huge time for comedy albums, and then basically video just ate it. You know, once comedians started selling VHS of their stand-up specials, that was the end of the comedy album. But he would just play Cheech and Chong and, you know, crazy 50s song parodies and old Bill Cosby records. And I would stay up to 1 a.m. and just tape stuff that came out. And he would play Tom Lehrer.
And yeah, he played Tom Lehrer. And he's also the Dr. Demento is also the guy who broke Weird Al.
Yeah, yeah. He played Another One Rides the Bus. Which was a cassette he recorded in a men's bathroom. It wasn't even professionally recorded. It was like him on his accordion.
Right, exactly.
Does Weird Al do these cruises? Because it seems like that's tailor-made for his style.
You know, hopefully. You know, it's been – I think it's – I don't know what discussions go on, but I know Weird Al is one of the often requested performers. Ukuleles have become real popular on the cruise, so that there's actually now a group of people who just bring their ukuleles. And so they'll be like – and there's a ukulele melee as one of the Shadow Cruise events where they just get together and there's like 25 people playing ukulele.
You know who would have loved that? You know who? George Harrison. George Harrison was obsessed with ukuleles. There was
I can imagine. You know, it's actually, you know, my girlfriend actually now she just ordered a ukulele as a result of the cruise, and she's actually thinking about picking up and learning the ukulele now.
We bought one in Hawaii, but Ben broke it when he was a toddler, and we never fixed it. There's a great story about George Harrison ukuleles where. He came to somebody's house. I don't know. I'm basically pulling it out of the air. I want to say like Jeff Lynne or like one of the Traveling Wilburys. And he's like, let's get together and play ukuleles. And he gets there and he's like, where's your ukulele? And he's like, George, I don't have a ukulele. Oh, that's good news. Come with me. And he goes to his car and opens up the trunk and it's full of ukuleles. He's like, pick one. That's yours now. Now let's play the ukulele together. And there's the only recording I know of George playing the ukulele was you remember the Beatles anthologies in the 90s?
Uh-huh.
The new interview footage. They put the three of them together and they were just sitting in a park and George was playing the ukulele.
Nice.
Yeah, and ironically there is a viral YouTube video of a guy playing While My Guitar Gently Weeps on the ukulele and he's playing the solo and everything. They're very hard to play. They're like – the chords are like really complicated.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, I wonder if it's an instrument that's hard to play if you've played other instruments or and then it's just easier if you haven't.
Probably because when I played the mandolin is basically strung like a backwards guitar.
Right.
So I was like, oh, it's easy. You know, I just switched the fingers and then C would be this and D would be this. Ukulele is strung completely differently. So I got like a – you know, I bought the ukulele in Hawaii and I bought a chord book and I gave up after about a week.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, also on the cruise we had the Watkins family. So Sarah Watkins and her brother, whose name I'm really embarrassed to be blanking on right now, doing some amazing stuff on the fiddle and the guitar and just doing some, you know, bluegrass inspired stuff that's now actually got me thinking, you know, me with, you know, my musical experience consists of 4 years of once a week playing the recorder in grade school, a couple of years of barely acceptable choir performance. And now I'm thinking, huh, maybe I should go out and learn the mandolin.
Mandolin's not that hard.
You know, plus I just like to be able to say that I just like to then be able to cover Bill Monroe songs. So there is that.
Yeah, Bill Monroe plays Bill Monroe.
So exactly.
I used to send you.
I'm not sure if this is a stupid idea or a good idea that I'm actually going to try and do. I'm still torn on that.
Yeah, it's a good idea. It's a good idea to try to learn. I mean, you know, the worst that happens is you buy one, then you end up not playing it. But you remember when you were in Montana? I used to send you any clipping I found of Bill Monroe.
Oh yeah.
And around the late 80s, he was still alive, and they were giving him all these all these like Lifetime Achievement Awards.
Exactly. That's why I still can't get BillMonroe.com. I do own BillMonroe.net and BillMonroe.org, but I can't get the .com.
Well, that's good. I don't own anything now. I own everything I own has Blogspot at the end of it. I own caffeinatedcomics.blogspot and notmygood.blogspot. We still can't get Caffeinated Comics because a store in San Francisco opened that was a comic book coffee house.
Okay.
And it closed 3 years ago because I did a Google search to make sure that nobody else had the name. And I was like, well, they're closed. So it's probably we could probably get away with it. But they still own the domain name. I can't get it.
Okay.
We're at like 40 minutes already.
Yeah. I mean, it's incredible. I do have to mention a couple of other folks that we saw on the cruise.
Yeah.
Jim Bogia. And I may be mispronouncing that. Amazing guitarist. And then the things he – when you talk about the ukulele, he went ahead and he made the ukulele perform like multiple guitars at once. Definitely would check him out. Pomplamoose, another great duo with sort of a country, modern, slightly old school Andrews – you know, just – I don't even know how to explain what they sounded like. But definitely another group to check out. Peter Sagal was on the boat with us. Host of NPR's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. John Roderick, Seattle-based musician, good friend of Joko and crew. And just an amazing type of thing. So, very much an awesome experience. And if anyone is interested in next year's cruise, next year they are going to open booking for it in mid-April, I believe, is the current target, and that is going to be an 8-night cruise from January 31st through February 8th, visiting St. Martin, St. Kitts, Puerto Rico, and Levity.
Now, with all this going on, it sounds like it sounds like a convention where there's multiple things happening at any given time. Did you have any downtime? Did you feel like you were running around the whole time, or were there days where you're just like, I'm going to read this book?
Oh, I had very little downtime. It was one afternoon.
But that's the way you want it.
Yeah, we found a couple of hours to actually sit out on the deck, and I read, and Kathy napped, and actually that day, that was the day because this year we stopped in the Caymans, and that was an amazing excursion. We went out to Stingray Island, which is just Stingray City, which is just a sandbar in the middle of the ocean. So you take a boat out like 30 minutes, and then they just drop you in the middle of the ocean, and you're standing on a sandbar. So the water is only like, you know, a foot to 5 feet deep in places. And these giant stingrays just come up, and you can hold them, and you spend time with them, and it's amazing.
Why are you holding stingrays?
Because it's cool.
They're named Stingray, and they killed the crocodile hunter.
Well, he deserved it.
No, he deserved to be eaten by a crocodile. The man lived his life as a theme. You know who doesn't kill the Green Goblin? The Fantastic Four. You know who doesn't kill the crocodile hunter? A stingray.
Stingray. Yeah. Yeah, no, but they were all very friendly, and then we went and we actually played with dolphins, and you actually get
okay, dolphins. I can understand.
Yeah, but no, they were very friendly. But the next day we were in Jamaica, and we had heard stories about Jamaica, and really had no desire to actually visit Jamaica. So we got off the boat, walked around the port, went to the duty free store, bought some rum, got back on the boat, and then just had several hours to relax.
We totally passed up the duty-free on the way back from Puerto Rico. Steven and I got the red eye, and it was like 2 in the morning, and our friend who drove us was like almost dead at the wheel by that point, and we were just starting to come down from a 3-day rum high.
Right.
So we just walked right past it. But it's good to know that the same weekend we were both focused on rum.
Oh, yes.
Rum's good.
Very much so. Very much so.
Yeah, I learned from my freelancing at Jim Beam last year that I like rum and bourbon. That's about it for liquor.
Okay.
But there's not a lot of rum or bourbon I don't like. So you said you're signed up for next year. You feel like you're going to go every year?
For now, it certainly looks that way. It's so much fun, and it's a nice thing. And while there's not a whole lot of downtime if you don't want to miss anything, you know, this one was a shorter one. This was only 6 nights. Next year is 8 nights, so that might be a little bit better. Wow. The schedule was a little too packed this time. It was a little too busy. But you know, none of the official events ever actually overlap. But still, next year, I'm hoping they have the same volume of activities just spread out over a couple more days. But yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to going next year. I mean, obviously, it's not the cheapest type of outfit, but yeah, it is so much fun, and it's such an amazing experience.
The greatest thing in the world.
This week
is unlimited beverage packages on cruises. One of the things.
Are we still talking about rum?
Oh, we are. We're talking about rum, and we are talking about scotch, and we are talking about beer, and we are talking about whiskey, and we are talking about fruity drinks, and we are talking about wine, and we are talking about even Diet Coke. We are talking about.
Okay, if there's that much unlimited beverages, how is anyone an introvert on that boat?
You know, it certainly helps. What I found is that, you know, they sell these packages. It costs like $55 a day. For the unlimited alcoholic beverages, up to like, you know, there's a certain price limit for each beverage. But I found that six drinks a day is the point where it breaks even. If you're drinking more than six drinks a day, you are going to make money on this beverage plan. But the great thing about this beverage plan is that while other people are buying drinks on the boat and they're having to run their room card and sign something for each and every drink they get, I can just flash my card, they swipe it, and they say, here is your beverage, sir. And what that meant was I got to try pretty much every one of the scotches and whiskeys they had available there, even at the morning buffet. I got to have like three Guinnesses while listening to Grant Imahara tell stories about explosives and Jamie Hyneman in the British style pub on the boat. I got to, during the main shows, just get beverages brought to me by the cocktail waiters coming through the main shows, and it was just amazing. The other thing I've discovered is that if you want to maximize your consumption, the bourbons and whiskeys and scotches are the way to go, because while the Mai Tais are amazing, you know, if after about three or four or five or six Mai Tais, then your stomach, you know, your stomach starts to go a little, ugh. But you know,
anything
what?
Anything too sugary,
it's not the alcohol, it's the sugar. And I figured it out. It's the sugary drinks. So you have a few of the sugary ones, and then you go straight to the important stuff.
Well, that's
and
what
we made money on it, and it was awesome.
That's what we learned this summer with the Voyages, and we gave you one of those in the summer. Yep. Which is it was our favorite drink of the summer of 2013. We had them on the air a few too many times, but what it is if we didn't explain it before, it's a Goose Island root beer, and Goose Island is a microbrew here, but they do a lot of ales, but they do a root beer, which is like just a little extra spicy. And we found if you put a shot of Captain Morgan to 12 ounces of root beer, it's just this amazing, like, extra spicy root beer with a little bit of a kick. But we also found it, if you have three of those, your mouth is just so saturated with sugar that you don't want any more alcohol.
Uh-huh.
But yeah. So when we were in Puerto Rico, we just started drinking Malibu on the rocks. We gave up on any kind of mixer.
That sounds like the start of a Jimmy Buffett song right there.
Oh, yeah. It sounds like the beginning of a Howard Beach night. That's what it sounds like. My greatest thing in the world this week was Steven just got the new Star Wars Black figures in the shop, so I picked up a couple. Now, Bill, do you know anything about this?
I don't. I know. I am excited for the new Star Wars movies.
Well, these are based on the originals, but what they've done is as I'm sure you know, Hasbro has had both Marvel and Star Wars for years. So the first thing they did was they took the Marvel Legends figures, which were – I'm sure you've at least seen them in my house. They're about 6 inches tall, and they have about 30 different joints. So you know, you can get Spider-Man into any pose. So when Hasbro first took it over –
And by the way, those dioramas all over your house, truly an astounding amount of work went into that.
Yeah, too much work. So what they originally did was they started making the Marvel figures Star Wars size, like we grew up with 3 3/4 size. And I got a lot of those. Those are winding down. So now they're flipping.
So you can have Wolverine piloting the X-Wing fighter.
That's why I bought all of them. Yes. No, here's why I bought all of them. Hulk throwing a G.I. Joe tank. How do you not want that to happen?
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, so I got a lot of those, but now they're flipping the switch the other way, and it looks like they're trying to just keep interest stoked until the new movie comes out, because as you're saying, you're very excited for the new movie, but what's going on right now? Right. So what they've decided to do is do the Star Wars figures like Marvel Legends. So they're doing sets of all the A-listers in 6 inches with about 30 different joints. So I picked up when they came out, I picked up R2-D2, and honestly, he was just a big R2-D2 because, you know, his head moves and his legs move and you can put a door in his head. That's R2-D2.
You know, he's got, you know, the figure has as much possible range of motion as the actual R2-D2.
Yes, you can smell a sweaty Kenny Baker inside it.
Oh, and by the way, on the cruise, we got to see Grant Imahara in the C-3PO costume because for 10 years, when there was a live C-3PO performance needed, it was Grant Imahara.
Really? So Anthony Daniels only did him on screen?
Well, he only did him on screen, and he would send voiceovers for commercials or for other public appearances because it didn't matter who was actually in the suit. But it was Mythbusters. It was all Grant Imahara.
That's what Frank Oz started doing later in his career. He didn't want to crouch down under a puppet. So he would just overdub like Grover and Miss Piggy. But these figures, I picked up Boba Fett, who right now is the hardest to find, which is why it's good to have a friend who owns a store. By the way,
how did Boba Fett get so cool?
He was all because he was the preview figure for Empire Strikes Back. So we all mailed away for him, and we had him for like a year, and it was a pretty cool design.
Uh-huh.
It was kind of like a more badass, like steampunk Kit Bash stormtrooper.
I love the idea of Boba Fett as a steampunk stormtrooper.
Tell me I'm wrong.
I can see it. I can absolutely see it.
But I remember when I got it, they put him out in 1979, and you had like a whole year, and he was just in your collection. And since you didn't know who he was and he looked cool, you would make him do the coolest stuff.
Okay.
So when you were playing, like, when you were playing with the hands, I thought he was a good guy for like a year because he was cool. My Boba Fett figure helped Han Solo, ironically, or at the time, unironically. And it wasn't until you saw the movie, and I remember waiting for Boba Fett when I saw Empire. Right. And I was like, there he is. And all he basically does is wave. Waves, and he flies his ugly ship around. It's shaped like an iron.
Mm-hmm.
But I got the Boba Fett, and I got the Stormtrooper. The Stormtrooper especially is just gorgeous. And, you know, they put all the joints where the armor segments.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, you and I grew up with the 5 points of articulation where they could basically do clothespins.
Sure.
But – These will stand as naturally as Spider-Man. And I'm not – I've said it many times. I'm not the Star Wars fan I used to be. But something this cool I can't pass up. So I'll probably get the good designs. I think they announced at Toy Fair they're doing a Biker Scout with a bike.
Okay.
So I'll definitely get that. There's a – Han Solo's out and there's a Chewbacca coming. I'll probably get that. And I'll definitely get a C-3PO because I already have R2-D2.
Sure.
So it's not a line I plan to collect straight through. God help me.
I've just heard that a few times before.
From me?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, when action figures come into play, it's not good.
but there's only a few thousand in the universe.
Yeah. Well, and they're all at my house. And they're all at my house, not being played with by children. But I'll continue to cherry pick the line because it's the kind of thing I think a lot of collectors were really waiting for a long time. The amount of detail and articulation. Bill, how can we find you online?
You can find me at cromely.net, cromely.net on Twitter. I'm also occasionally at Cromley. And if you want to see photos from the cruise before St. Patrick's Day, I'll have a whole bunch of them up on my Flickr account. And on Flickr, my username is again Cromley, Cromely.
Hey, Bill, you know what? When you get those pictures up, why don't you post a few to the Caffeinated Comics Facebook page?
Absolutely. I certainly will.
Great, because we've been doing that with Puerto Rico and with some of the conventions. So that would be a great place for people to look at them. You can follow me at Twitter, at Not In My Book, Bill, you do. And again, the Caffeinated Comics Facebook page. Don't forget to subscribe on iTunes and leave a comment both on our Blogspot page, which is our archive, and on iTunes itself. Bill, thanks again for being on.
Oh, thanks a lot, John. It's always a lot of fun.
Yeah, next time we're in the same city, we'll have to sit down together and have this exact same conversation.
We sure will.
Caffeinated Comics is a Not In My Book production.
Thank-